Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're looking at the Book of Nehemiah,
Oh, yeah.
but through a particular lens,
That's right.
a lecture series.
That's right.
And maybe not your typical leadership guru
Right.
when you think Nehemiah rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem,
No, not at all.
but we're going to find some pretty relevant stuff.
Oh, absolutely. This is a really great source for looking at leadership. And what's so interesting about it is that it comes at it from this scholarly, but also faith-based perspective.
Right. So we're not just looking at the historical events. We're
Right.
trying to tease out
Exactly.
the leadership
That's
principles.
right. The timeless principles that you can apply to your own life.
Yeah. And things get really interesting
Oh, yeah.
because we've got internal conflict. We've got sneaky tactics from opponents. We even have righteous anger.
That's right. Even anger can be a tool for good.
Oh, we like that. So
Yeah.
we're going to unpack all that.
Yeah.
So the scene is set. Nehemiah is facing opposition from the outside to this project. But while he's rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem,
Yeah.
a new conflict emerges, and it emerges
From within.
from within.
That's right.
And it's rooted in something that is still with us today, unfortunately, and that is economic injustice.
Yeah, that's right. And the source material goes into quite a bit of detail about the different groups that are involved in this. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so relevant for us today is we can see these same dynamics at play in our own world.
Okay, so give me a little bit more detail on
Yeah.
who these groups are.
So first you have those who are really struggling to survive. They're barely scraping by. They have to sell their sons and daughters into servitude just to buy food. Yeah,
Heartbreaking.
it's really hard to read those passages. And you can just imagine what that would have been like.
Absolutely.
And then you have another group who, although they own property, they're forced to mortgage everything they have just to buy grain.
Right.
You can almost feel the desperation in their situation as well. And then you have a third group who
Okay.
are drowning in debt. They've had to borrow money to pay their taxes, but the interest rates are so high they simply can't repay. And so some are forced to give up their land as collateral.
This does not sound good.
No, not at all.
So we're setting the stage here for this tension.
Yes. And then you have
Okay.
the fourth group, and these are the wealthy Jews who are profiting from this misery. They're the ones who are lending money at exorbitant rates, and they're taking advantage of this situation. And it's really fueling this division and resentment.
Right, so not exactly unity
No, not at all.
and collaboration,
There I
right?
am.
And what's interesting is that this behavior goes directly against biblical law.
Yes,
When you think
applicable.
about Leviticus 25 and that emphasis on caring for the vulnerable,
Yes, the idea of jubilee
right?
and releasing people from debt and, showing compassion in your lending practices is just completely absent here.
Yeah, so I mean, you really see, I guess, a perversion of God's intention for community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, God's intention was for the Israelites to be a community that supported each other, particularly those who were struggling.
Right.
But here we see the opposite. We see greed, we see exploitation.
So how does Nehemiah respond?
Well, let's just say he doesn't just sit back and ignore this problem.
Does he get angry?
He does. He gets very angry.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's important to note that the source material really emphasizes that this is righteous anger.
Oh, okay. So not
It's
just
not just anger. Yeah.
grumpy anger.
Right. It's not personal offense. It's about seeing injustice and being moved to act.
I think we can all relate to that, right?
I think
In
so.
different ways.
Yeah.
That feeling of righteous anger.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, how do you know
That's a great question.
if it's righteous anger or just plain old anger?
Right, yeah, that's a tough one. I think the source material suggests that righteous anger is rooted in this deep sense of justice,
Okay.
this desire to see wrong made right.
Yeah, okay.
It's not about revenge, it's not about, personal gain or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, so it's almost like you're aligning yourself with God's heart for justice
Exactly, yeah.
and compassion.
Yeah, and I think a great example of that is how Jesus himself got angry
Right.
when he saw the money changers exploiting people in the temple.
Right.
It was about protecting the sanctity of worship. It
Right.
was about standing up for the vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it was this righteous indignation.
Yeah, so we see that it can be a catalyst for positive change.
Absolutely.
So Nehemiah is angry,
Yes.
rightfully so.
Yes.
But does he just stew in his anger or does he actually do something about it?
Oh, he takes action.
I like it.
He immediately confronts the nobles and officials who are exploiting the poor.
Right.
He calls them out on their behavior. He reminds them of their obligations under the law,
Wow.
and he demands that they make restitution.
So he's not afraid to ruffle some feathers.
No, he is not.
Or speak truth to power.
Not at all. And I think what's even more impressive is that he leads by example.
Okay. How so?
So he personally refuses to charge interest on loans, and he even gives up some of his own possessions to help those who are struggling.
So he's really walking the walk here.
He is.
Not just talking the talk.
That's right.
So it's about action.
Yes.
Not just words.
Exactly. And I think that's what the lecture series really emphasizes, is that the main takeaway from this passage shouldn't be some abstract philosophical concept of justice.
Right.
It's about actually doing something to help the poor and vulnerable in very tangible ways.
Yeah. And that leads to the question for us as the listeners. Whose responsibility is it?
Right.
Is it the government's job to take care of the poor?
Right.
Is it the individual?
Yeah.
Is it communities?
It's a question that's been debated for centuries, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any easy answer.
No.
But I think the point is we all have a role to play.
Right.
And I think Nehemiah's example really challenges us to think about what we're doing.
Absolutely.
To make a difference.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and dive into what happens next. Yeah, it's a question that's been debated for centuries and there are no easy answers. But Nehemiah's story definitely pushes us to examine our own role in creating a more just world. But while he's dealing with all this internal conflict, the external opposition doesn't exactly take a break, do they?
No, they do not remember Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem.
Oh, yeah. Those guys.
They're still lurking in the shadows, waiting for their opportunity to strike. And so they hatch a plan.
Ooh, sneak.
They send Nehemiah an invitation.
Okay.
To a meeting.
All right.
Sounds harmless enough, right?
Sure. Let's talk.
Let's talk. Let's collaborate. You know, they say they want to discuss the rebuilding project.
So what's the catch? Why wouldn't he jump at this chance?
Well, they propose meeting in a place called the Plain of Ono.
Okay.
Which was kind of like a neutral territory.
Okay.
And on the surface, it all sounds very reasonable, you know, very open to dialogue.
Right.
But Nehemiah is a shrewd leader,
hmm.
and he sees right through their facade.
Ooh, I like it.
He senses that their true intention is to lure him away from Jerusalem.
Okay.
Where he's most needed, and into a situation where they can potentially harm him or sabotage the project.
So not only is he courageous, he's got wisdom. He's got discernment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He can sniff out a trap a mile away.
So what does he do?
And what's so great is his response.
Yeah.
He doesn't accuse them directly or get bogged down in, you know, a war of words.
Yeah.
He simply states that he's far too busy with his crucial work.
Right.
And he can't afford to be distracted.
He's focused.
He is laser focused.
I like it.
And that's such a crucial leadership lesson, isn't it? The ability to discern what deserves your time and energy,
right.
and what is simply a distraction,
yeah.
you know?
It's like, don't wrestle with pigs.
Exactly.
You both get dirty, but the pig likes it.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're bombarded with so much information these days, right?
All the time.
And so many requests for our time and our energy.
Yeah. It's so easy to get pulled in a million different directions.
Mm. Yeah. And Nehemiah's just like, nope, I see what you're doing. I'm staying on my mission.
Yep. And it's not just about recognizing outright lies or manipulation, you know, it's also about being aware of those almost right things.
Ooh, that's good.
You know, those seemingly harmless requests or opportunities that can actually derail you from your mission.
Yes.
So it's about discernment on multiple levels.
I love. So they tried this a couple times.
They do. They tried this meeting ploy a few times.
Yeah.
And each time Nehemiah politely but firmly declines.
Okay.
But these guys are persistent.
Of course they are.
They're nothing if not persistent.
Right.
So when the friendly overtures fail,
yeah.
they resort to a more insidious tactic, a smear campaign.
Uh-oh.
Think fake news, ancient world style.
I like it. What do they do?
They send Nehemiah an open letter.
Okay.
Which means it was meant to be circulated widely.
Right.
Filled with all these accusations designed to destroy his reputation.
Right.
And undermine his authority.
So what do they say?
So they claim that he's rebuilding the wall because he wants to rebel against the Persian king.
Okay.
And that he has ambitions to crown himself king of Judah.
Wow.
And that he's even planting prophets.
What?
To spread this message of rebellion.
So these are pretty serious accusations.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially back then, right?
Especially in the context of the Persian Empire.
Right.
I mean, treason was not taken lightly.
No.
If the king believed these lies.
Yeah.
Nehemiah could face imprisonment or even death.
So talk about pressure.
Yeah, talk about pressure.
So what does he do? How does he handle this attack on his character?
Well, Nehemiah does what any wise leader facing these kinds of odds would do. He turns to prayer.
Okay.
He asks God for strength to stay the course and not be swayed by these false accusations.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that sometimes the best way to combat negativity and lies isn't to get into a fight, but to ground yourself in your values and seek guidance from a higher source.
Absolutely. And I think that's so relevant for us today, you know, in this world of social media and online arguments.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up in the drama and the back and forth.
It's exhausting.
But Nehemiah's story shows us the power of staying rooted in our faith.
Right.
And our values, even when the world around us feels chaotic.
Yeah. And so he's facing all this external opposition. He's got the internal conflict going on. And now he's got a smear campaign. You'd think at some point he'd catch a break.
You would think.
But the story takes another turn.
It does. And this one is particularly unsettling.
Okay. I'm on the edge of my seat now. What happens?
A new character enters the scene.
Okay.
A prophet named Shemaiah.
All right.
And Shemaiah claims to have a message from God.
Ooh. We got to be careful with those.
We do. Because things are not always what they seem.
Right.
So Shemaiah approaches Nehemiah.
Yeah.
With what appears to be a genuine warning.
Okay.
He says your enemies are planning to assassinate you.
Oh, no.
Under the cover of night.
Right.
And he urges Nehemiah to seek refuge in the temple.
Well, that sounds like pretty good advice.
It does on the surface, right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't he do that?
Because here's the twist. Jewish law strictly forbade anyone other than priests from entering certain areas of the temple.
Right.
So if Nehemiah followed Shemaiah's advice, he would be breaking religious law.
Oh, wow.
Compromising his integrity.
Right.
And giving his enemies even more ammunition to discredit him.
So he can't win.
Talk about a no-win situation.
Yeah.
And what the lecture series really emphasizes here is that Shemaiah was likely hired by Tobiah and Sanballat.
Oh, wow. So this is a setup.
This is a setup. They were using fear and this kind of false piety to manipulate Nehemiah.
Wow. So they're not just attacking him from the outside. They're trying to plant seeds of doubt and fear within his own community.
Exactly. It's a classic example of spiritual manipulation.
Right.
You know, using religion or spirituality
to
control or exploit someone.
And that's something that we still see today, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like how you protect yourself from that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the source material suggests that discernment is key. You know, being able to distinguish between genuine spiritual guidance and manipulative tactics.
Okay.
It's about staying rooted in your own values and principles.
Right.
But also being open to wise counsel from trusted sources.
Yeah.
So finding that balance.
So what does Nehemiah do? Does he fall? Does he run and hide in the temple?
Not a chance.
I love it.
He sees right through Shemaiah's deception.
Yeah.
And he questions, you know, why would he, as a leader, entrusted with this divine mission, abandon his post and cower in fear?
Right. So that unwavering courage and faith that we've been talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And his response is so powerful. He says, should someone in my position run from danger, should someone like me go into the temple to save his life, I will not go.
He's got this moral clarity.
He does.
That's amazing.
Like a statement about responsibility.
You know, great.
Like true leadership and about refusing to give in to fear.
I love it. But this isn't the end of his troubles, is it?
Unfortunately, no. The expert points out that Shemaiah wasn't the only false prophet trying to influence Nehemiah.
Oh, wow.
A prophetess named Noadiah also joined this chorus of fear, you know, spreading doubt and trying to derail the project.
Wow. So he's just surrounded by enemies, it seems like, both internal and external. And it really makes you appreciate how much pressure he was under and how he managed to stay focused despite all these attempts to undermine him.
It's a remarkable testament to his resilience.
It is.
Think about it. He's dealing with opposition from powerful external forces. Mm. He's dealing with conflict and injustice within his own community. And now he has to discern truth from falsehood, even among those claiming to speak for God.
That is tough.
It's a true test of leadership.
Yeah.
A crucible that forges strength and character.
So the question is, how would any of us hold up under that kind of pressure? And what can we learn from his story?
And that's the beauty of this deep dive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even though we're talking about events that happened centuries ago,
right?
The lessons are so relevant to our lives today.
Absolutely. We may not be facing threats on our lives or rebuilding ancient walls, but we all encounter situations where we have to discern truth from falsehood, where we have to navigate complex relationships, and where we're tempted to give in to fear or discouragement.
And I think Nehemiah's story gives us a framework for navigating those challenges.
Okay. I like it.
You know, it reminds us to be discerning, to ground ourselves in our values, to stay focused on our mission, and to find strength in prayer and faith, even when the world around us feels chaotic.
So what happens next? Does Nehemiah finally catch a break, or does he have to endure even more trials? So after all that drama and opposition, you'd think there'd be a huge sigh of relief, right? Does the story end with Nehemiah triumphantly standing atop the finished wall, enemies scattered, everybody cheering?
Well, you'd think so, and there is definitely a moment of triumph despite all the obstacles. The wall is finished in a record 52 days.
52 days? That's amazing.
It is, and even Nehemiah's enemies are stunned.
Yeah.
You know, they recognize that this accomplishment, it's not just human effort. There's something almost supernatural about it.
Right.
Even in their opposition, they can't deny that a powerful force is at work here.
And so everybody celebrates, right? Happy ending. Roll the credits.
Well, not quite. The opposition doesn't just vanish. Tobiah, one of Nehemiah's most persistent antagonists, he continues to plot and scheme, trying to find new ways to undermine him.
Oh, this guy, talk about not knowing when to quit. So what does he try next?
This is where the story takes a fascinating turn. Tobiah starts leveraging his family ties within the Jewish community.
Oh!
Using those connections to exert influence and sow discord.
So instead of direct attacks, he's playing the long game now.
Exactly.
Trying to weaken Nehemiah's support from within. It's a much more subtle form of opposition.
It is, and it's a tactic that's still relevant today, isn't it? I mean, think about how people use social connections.
Oh, yeah.
To sway opinions, to gain advantage, or to undermine their opponents. It happens in politics, in business, even in our personal lives.
All the time, right? It makes you think about the importance of discerning who has your best interests at heart. Right, because sometimes loyalty to family or friends can cloud our judgment and lead us to compromise our values.
That's such a powerful insight. And I think Nehemiah's story really highlights that tension that can exist between loyalty and integrity.
Right.
Sometimes standing up for what's right means making tough choices.
Yeah.
Even if it means going against those closest to us.
So how does it all end? Does Nehemiah manage to hold on to his leadership and see his reforms through?
Well, the book of Nehemiah doesn't give us all the details of what happened next, but it does end on a note of hope and resilience. You know, we see that Nehemiah, through his unwavering faith, the strong leadership and the unity he fostered among the people, was able to overcome these seemingly insurmountable obstacles.
It's a powerful reminder that even when we face opposition, even when people try to undermine us, we can persevere if we stay true to our values and our mission.
Absolutely. And remember, this isn't just an ancient story about a guy rebuilding a wall.
Right.
It's a blueprint for effective leadership in any era.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Nehemiah, what are some of the key takeaways you want our listeners to walk away with?
Well, I think first and foremost, effective leadership requires confronting both internal and external challenges.
Right.
Sometimes the toughest battles are fought within our own teams or organizations.
Yeah.
Dealing with conflict, injustice, or apathy.
Absolutely. And I think, as we saw with Nehemiah, discernment is absolutely crucial.
Oh, yes.
We need to be able to see through deception, recognize manipulation, and filter out the noise so we can focus on what truly matters.
And finally, I think Nehemiah's story reminds us that anger, when channeled righteously, can be a catalyst for positive change.
Right. So it's not just about keeping the peace or being agreeable all the time.
Not at all.
Sometimes true leadership requires us to take a stand.
Yes.
Even if it's uncomfortable or unpopular.
I think Nehemiah's story is a powerful reminder that even when facing immense pressure, we can find strength in our convictions.
Right.
And in uniting with others who share our values.
So as you go about your day, think about the challenges you face. How can you apply the lessons from Nehemiah's story to your own life? How can you lead with courage, wisdom, and resilience?
Remember, no matter what obstacles you face, you have the potential to overcome them and make a positive impact on the world, just like Nehemiah.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and until next time, keep exploring.